We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
You are listening to KC Sports Network, proudly presented by M-Prize Bank, your partner in possible. Coming up, the latest episode of the KCSN Draft Show, getting Chiefs Kingdom ready for the 2023 NFL Draft. Hosted right here in Kansas City with the best analysis, interviews, and content you can find to stay up to date and in the know. With that said, let's begin the show.
What's going on, Chiefs Kingdom? I'm BJ Kissel. We've got a couple of special guests for this episode of the KCSN Draft Show for you. As you can tell, we are still at the NFL Scouting Combine in Indianapolis. Great stuff from Brett Veach and Andy Reid earlier this week. You can check out that podcast with Tucker Franklin. But right now, talk some of the top players in this draft, maybe a couple of guys that you should be familiar with as we go throughout this pre-draft process. Is the Chiefs obviously picking at 31 in the first round. We're joined by ESPN's Field Yates because they're very good at football.
They ended up at 31?
Yeah.
They traded for that pick or did they? They won the Super Bowl.
They did.
Has that happened at all recently?
Twice.
Four
crazy.
Years? That's weird. It's good to be them, huh?
Yeah. You were in Kansas City. You understand a little bit about the passion of the fan base.
And I miss it dearly.
Yeah.
I'm from New England area. I live there. I live in Connecticut now, which is where ESPN is. And my wife went to Boston College, which is, they've had some moments of good football years, but it's largely been lean. I haven't had the chance to go to many big college
house that
football
Mike
games.
Borgonzi built.
That's right. Borgonzi should be a GM. We'll talk about it. Ask me about that because I'll have a 20-minute rant on it, but somewhere. But I didn't have a chance to go to many big-time college football games. But my experiences at Arrowhead were like big-time college football games, 6 a.m. And this was not necessarily during the peak years, right? And the fans were there. You could smell the barbecue from miles. You get off the highway and you could smell the barbecue. And the passion was exceptional. Love the atmosphere of the game. I consider myself very fortunate to have had some moments there at Arrowhead Stadium, Jeeha Stadium.
Jeeha. Although Chris Jones calls it Jeeha, so apparently it's allowed.
I'm following
at that
the
point.
Lead of Stone Cold Jones.
Yeah. Once he says it, then it's kind of accepted that's what you're going to say. I think people have been following me for a long time or been following the content we've done. You probably heard me tell this story before, but I'm contractually obligated on a contract that does not exist to bring up the story every time we do anything together because I talk about it when people ask me about my media career and that it was unique. It started completely different, started off blogging at Arrowhead Pride. And I remember talking with my wife and having a conversation with her about all the hours I was putting into it and what was getting paid at that time. And it started off as a hobby. I wasn't doing it to try to make a career out of this. And it got to a point I had been writing and podcasting, doing these things for 3 or 4 years at this site. And I was trying to take the next step. And I was talking with a good friend, Joel Thorman. He and his brother, Chris, had started Arrowhead Pride.
Yeah.
He was the editor at the time. And he's the one who gave me your contact info. So I was talking to Joel, how do I move up in this? And how do I go from what I'm doing now, which is 25, 30 hours a week, to making a career? And the lines have blurred over the last 10 years compared to what they were 15 years ago or however long ago that was, about 12 years ago. And now there's a lot more the blogging, the podcasting, social media has kind of changed things. But then I remember calling you and I'll never forget because we did not know each other. We'd never met, but we mutual people that we knew. And I called and I was hiking Torrey Pines in San Diego. I was at the top of a little lookout and I was sitting on the bench, just looking at this picturesque ocean. And I was calling the guy that just joined ESPN Boston. It had been Todd Haley's assistant and you know, like I said, Joel said he's a good dude, called Field. And you talked to me, man, for almost an hour on the phone. And I was asking for your advice on how do I go from what I'm doing to what I want to do. I'm not the most knowledgeable football X's and O's guy. I'm not this, I'm not that. And I'll never forget, you said, you have to get in front of athletes. You've got to get in front. You've got to interview, tell stories. You just, that's what's going to separate you from doing this. And I took that advice. And that was right before my wife and I moved back from San Diego to Kansas City.
Yeah.
And so we moved back to Kansas City, spent most of our savings moving back. And I told my wife, I'm going to go down to the Senior Bowl because I can get credentialed there.
Yeah.
I'm going to get in front of athletes. And if this doesn't work out, if nothing leads out of this, I will stop this media stuff and I will go sell insurance. I'll go find another job. I'll find a regular job. Because at that time, I was working 25 hours a week and $300 a month, whatever it was. Like, it wasn't sustainable. And I was like, this is the advice that I was given. This is the actionable plan I'm going to take. Went down there, met Matt Miller at Bleacher Report. He helped. He introduced me to Colin and a few of the other guys, Dylan at that time. They introduced me to him, and it led to me getting hired at Bleacher Report, which led me to doing certain stories that then when the Chiefs job opened, they handed a handful of this content that I had done at Bleacher Report, sure, which I never would have got that job if I had not gone to the Senior Bowl, and never would have gone to the Senior Bowl if you hadn't given me that advice. So every time I tell it, you had no reason, and no, there was no reason for you to give me that time for that hour, but I don't say this lightly when it honestly was the catalyst of starting something that changed my life.
This is like, you know, when the Chiefs found Patrick Mahomes in Lubbock, Texas, they identified a talent and they said, you know, we're going to stand by this guy because we see something great. And now you've everything that you get or that you have gotten, you have earned. And I couldn't be happier to see your success. And I was playing the long game. I was waiting for the invitation to come on the show today. And we've done this, a couple of combines in a row, but it's been, this is the beauty of where we are right now in today's NFL media is that the traditional path is no longer traditional. You can you can find something you're passionate about, cover it daily, and build something great, and an audience will respond to you. And the passion of Kansas City fans that we discussed earlier is basically unmatched, and it's reflected in the success that you've had doing your own thing with a great team around you.
Yeah, that's what it's all about. I mean, you get good advice, talk with good people. It's the reason I love coming to the Combine. We all have a shared love of football. We all get together and talk about it for a solid week in Indianapolis. It's always fun.
The best.
And I want to ask about the prospect stuff, but you brought up earlier about Mike Borgonzi, and I'll talk about Mike Borgonzi for as long as you want to talk about.
Yeah.
Because his name should be thrown around more. I'm surprised it hasn't been thrown around as much with the success that they've had. The culture that's built is that he knows, and he's been around. He knows what to build that culture looks like. He's been there for a long time through different regimes. He was there before Brett Veach and Andy Reid got there. He's one of the guys that stayed. But yeah, he should be on a short list of GMs that if you want to come in and set an organization the right way that can sustain success, Mike Borgonzi knows how to do that.
Yeah. I think a personal mission of mine is to see him become a GM just because I know how deserving he is. And there's this interesting dynamic when you're discussing the credentials of a future coach or a future GM that I feel uncomfortable with now. What tends to happen is that you gravitate towards the hot coordinators and you say, how awesome would this guy be as a head coach? And in the case of some, they end up becoming great head coaches. In the cases of others, they flail after just 1 year, right? I mean, we saw a 15 game tenure this past season in Denver for a coach that was perceived and he was billed as this offensive genius, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's a difference between being a coordinator and being a head coach. And there's a difference between an assistant GM and a GM. That being said, when you've worked with somebody personally, you feel a bit more emboldened to speak about their credentials. I felt that way about Ryan Poles, who thrilled for the opportunity he has right now in Chicago. And I think Bears fans are very fortunate to have him. And I feel the same way about where Mike Borgonzi eventually becomes a GM. And, you know, there's only so many openings. There's 32 in total. Not every team even has a GM, right? And they don't necessarily open up as frequently as coaching gigs do. But if you're an NFL owner listening to this show right now, or just a fan that has a tie to an NFL owner, make sure you drop that name in there because there's nobody more deserving, I really believe, in the league than Mike Borgonzi.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting, and you might be able to speak to this because of the role that you had when you were at the Chiefs. You saw it differently in that, you know, the pro personnel department, the college personnel department, sometimes they cross train and they do a little bit of both and they have a chance for those scouts to do both. Sometimes they're kind of siloed where you've got this specifically. And then Mike's worked in both. And so much about being a GM, same thing with being a head coach. And you mentioned it, you know, coordinators become head coaches and it's not about, you know, making the calling the timeout at the right time or the best 2 minute situation, whether you're offensive or defensive minded, you're a CEO, you're handling people, you're handling the organization. You're the one deciding does a family get to go in the locker room after the game, all the stuff, all the crap that you don't think about as a coordinator necessarily. All of a sudden you have to be the one to answer all those questions as a head coach. And then on the scouting side, same kind of deal. And I bring all that up to say, we both know Mike Borgonzi's temperament, his personality, and that he's going to bring people together. He's got that kind of, we're all on this team and communicate and again, set a culture of what they're trying to do.
Totally.
And that everybody will kind of fall in line and respect the way that he handles himself and the way that he handles his people.
No question about it. And you're absolutely right. Everything that you just said, he can evaluate both sides of it. And one of the realities of having a lot of success is that you endure challenges that are different than when you are building from scratch. And there's some high society problems to deal with when you have a team that's good, and that's making difficult decisions. It's having to trade away one of the best receivers in football and having to evaluate how do we replenish the roster if we do that. What's the cost-benefit analysis of acquiring 6 draft picks in exchange for a guy that we know if we keep him, he's going to help us win a lot of games.
Yeah.
And I believe strongly, and you know, I'd love to see it happen. I hope it's next year. I hope it's the next opening. I hope every next opening that becomes available has Mike Borgonzi on their short list. And you know, not just a great evaluator, but great human, and we need great humans in the NFL leading organizations. And I can certainly speak to the personal character there that he's as good of a man as you'll find in this league.
And the family and Jill and all of them would be awesome to see. And I self just want to see more people that I know personally staying on the podiums, because you got it on the coaching side. Now you got Poles and Ballard and all these guys.
Totally,
I get to a point where I'm going to know like a third or a quarter of the coaches or GMs that are standing on podiums, because Andy Reid and that whole culture gets it done. But Phil, let's talk a little bit about some of these draft prospects, the reason that we're all here in the draft this year. It's interesting for Chiefs fans because it's been like a week, not even a week since the parade and celebrating that. And now we're pivoting very quickly and talking about the draft.
Right?
But let's talk globally first. What are the strengths, weaknesses? What stands out about this particular draft compared to maybe the last few?
Yeah, so I would say that this is a class that will be defined by the quarterbacks, because there are 3, maybe 4 that will go in the top 10. Everybody knows the names: Bryce Young, Will Levis, CJ Stroud, and Anthony Richardson is kind of the wild card here. Mm-hmm. I don't know that it's a great draft beyond that. Like, blue chip prospects beyond the quarterbacks are probably a little bit harder to find this year than other years. The cornerback class is very interesting, deep. The tight end class is just very deep in general, not bad for edge rushers. I think it's okay though in a lot of spots. Okay in wide receiver. Okay at offensive tackle, pretty good in the first round for offensive tackle, but not dominant. You know, we've seen some really good all pro level tackles in the past few, whether it's Rashawn Slater types or guys of that level that I think are really talented. I don't know that it's quite that caliber of a class. But the best part about the NFL draft is that we're going to assume that there are like 25 good players, and then 50 guys taken after the 100th pick are going to wind up being really good players too.
Yeah. I like, by about mid April, there's like 86 players that are projected first round picks.
Yeah. They're all, well, they're all first round picks, right?
Yeah. And that's the one, I guess, not frustrating thing, because I say the Chiefs winning a lot is frustrating, but you talk draft as a Chiefs fan, you have no idea who's going to be there at 31. There's not zero clue.
And by the way,
on what they're going to do. And you haven't even hit free agency.
Yeah. With the time that you and I are having this conversation, what could change between now and 6 days from now is pretty dramatic, right? If Orlando Brown Jr. is re-tagged,
right?
Or if a deal is done before free agency, left tackle's not a need.
Yep.
But if Orlando Brown Jr. is not there, well, then I think it's pretty obvious what the Chiefs' top need is this offseason. It's potentially 2 offensive tackles you're replacing. So the other thing about the draft is that it takes place after free agency, as opposed to the NBA as an example, where it takes place before free agency. So the gaps that you think you have to fill right now could be filled over the next month.
You're listening to the fastest-growing sports media network in Kansas City, KC Sports Network. We'll be back right after this.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink, which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Entertain, educate, inform. KC Sports Network.
Let's stay on tackle because, again, that's two moves that they have to make, whether it's Andrew Wiley moving on, getting paid somewhere, especially the way that he played down the stretch.
Really strong.
Let's talk about the tackles in this draft. You mentioned some in the first round, not maybe blue chip, but Chiefs don't have to worry about the blue chip because they're not going to be drafting anywhere near getting blue chips like that. But this is – we've seen them find success. I mean, look at last year's draft class. Fourth most snaps played by drafted rookies last year, the Kansas City Chiefs, who also happened to win the Super Bowl. We started talk about – 7-8 guys on the defensive side. It's crazy. Talk tackles. Who are some of the guys maybe at the end of the first round, mid to end of first round that could be available that stand out to you?
I'll just go through the ones that are probably first round picks because at this point I don't have a great grasp of like high first round pick versus mid first round pick. But Peter Skoronski from Northwestern played awesome in some big moments, played well against Ohio State this past year in a crazy game with like awful weather where Ohio State couldn't move the football at all, but it's hard to play defense. It's hard to play offense against Ohio State every week, and he did a great job. Some think he could be a guard, a little bit of a shorter-armed prospect, but Peter Skoronski, very, very good player. Some believe he could be a top 10 pick. Paris Johnson Jr. from Ohio State, one of two Ohio State tackles who I think will end up going pretty high in the draft. And Juan Jones is 6'9". He plays right tackle for Ohio State, but we're talking all of 6'9", 380 pounds. I mean, that's a mountain of a man. There's only like three guys in the league that are close, Orlando Brown Jr. being one of them, Trent Brown being one of them. But those guys are rare body types. And then Broderick Jones from Georgia, the left tackle who played a ton of snaps for them this year. He's a phenomenal athlete, big-time player, a redshirt sophomore this year. So he's young, hasn't played a ton of football as relative or compared to some of the other guys that could be drafted. But those are the three to four names that I think you hear quite often in the first slash top of the second round chatter.
All right, let's stick with some of the storylines again. We know going into free agency, we've talked about it a lot on this network, that the wide receiver position, the Chiefs are going to have to make some moves, whether it's bringing the guys that they had last year back.
Yeah.
Just from a sheer number standpoint, said this probably 1,000 times over the last 2 weeks, the only receivers under contract for the Chiefs beyond this season, so starting in the new league year and here in a couple weeks, are Kadarius Toney, Sky Moore, and Marquez Valdez-Scantling.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah, that's it. And I think there's in some ways the pre-free agency in the Kadarius Toney trade, the Sky Moore draft pick last year. MVS played like 95% of the snaps this year in a ton of games. So he'll be same thing he was this year. But this is a buyer beware market for the free agent wide receiver class. I think there's a pretty healthy debate about who the number one wide receiver is. I think it's going to end up being somebody like out the beginning. It's how they're going to be Juju Smith-Schuster, Jacoby Myers.
Yep.
You want to lump Odell Beckham Jr. into this conversation, you can, but he's been available for so long that it's hard for me to know exactly where the health is.
Yeah.
Obviously didn't play at all last season. I think Mecole Hardman's going to do very well for himself in free agency. He's got a lot of traits that are desirable. Sudden, fast, obviously, has big plays on his resume. But the question is, as we saw last year, that market exploded. So I don't know exactly where Juju will check in, but I think, Jacoby Myers could be a $15 million per year guy. He is so solid.
Yeah.
Does everything well, but nothing at that like rare level, right? Doesn't run real fast, not super big, not bulldozing with strength, right?
Yeah.
As an example, like how do you evaluate that? And I think there is probably some value to be had both in the draft and also in the later waves of free agency for wide receivers.
I think there's a lot to get excited about with making moves and making trades. And that was the DeAndre Hopkins over the last week. That was a a conversation that people are having of, would you bring in DeAndre Hopkins? Is he washed all this? He's not washed. DeAndre Hopkins with Patrick Mahomes, there's no reason that any Chiefs fan wouldn't be excited about what that pairing would look like, but you're giving up draft assets, resources, you're having to pay top dollar. But to your point, with the free agent market, you're having to pay a lot of money because you're building through free agency in that way. So most likely scenario, you bring Juju, Justin Watson come back. You still need to bring in somebody. If they draft somebody, we haven't seen a ton of production from rookie wide receivers in Andy Reid's offense because it takes time.
It does. And that's just a reality of the football, of the NFL. It's development. It's adjusting. I will say this though, on DeAndre Hopkins, is you just got to be careful too, because let's just envision, like right now people are saying, well, you know, he's due this over the next 2 years. I believe it's about $36 million. Yep. If DeAndre Hopkins is not traded, or even if he is traded before free agency begins, or deals agreed to, and those other wide receivers cash in big, let's just say that Jacoby Myers gets $16 million per year, even $15 million per year.
Yep.
DeAndre Hopkins probably saying to himself, I'm not playing for $18 million a year for the next two seasons. He might be saying, hey, you want to trade for me? You're also going to have to give me a big raise, $25 million a year. So just, I want people to be aware that, like, how you see the contract right now may not be how you see the contract once he's traded somewhere.
Yeah. And then the conversation isn't, is DeAndre Hopkins worth 25? It's the difference between
him and Orlando Brown, right?
Him, Orlando Brown, or just if you're going to go get, if it's not, you know, DeAndre Hopkins and making the trade and giving up some sort of draft pick, it's, do we want to give Jacoby Myers $16 million? Is DeAndre Hopkins worth $9 million more than what we get in Jacoby Myers? So interesting discussion, interesting story. There's going to be moves at the wide receiver position just because they have to based on their numbers. Again, even if that is bringing back Juju, which I'd be happy about. I think it's probably the most likely scenario that Juju comes back in some way. Justin Watson comes back and then they draft a young guy. They can get somebody in free agency fine. But to your point, we saw last year, some of those contracts that were given out to wide receivers were a lot more than anyone thought they were going to be. And that market got set for what a wide receiver is going to cost.
Sure. Yeah. And that's, all part of the calculus and the equation. One of the great problems, one of the great realities or great advantages of being Super Bowl champs is that, like, your trial and error risk goes way up, right? If the Chiefs overpay for somebody in free agency at wide receiver, it's not going to cripple their roster this year, right? Like, MVS was really good down the stretch and good in the playoffs too, but like, there were a portion of the season where he was really quiet, right? And you're like, I don't know if it's a $10 million per year. Who cares?
Right.
Didn't bother him, right? Like, they're off. He played a ton of snaps. Like 95% of the snaps in a bunch of games I mentioned earlier, like, had good production. Like, I'm like, that's a totally serviceable contract now, right? Especially with where the wide receiver market is, right? But it might not be elsewhere.
Yeah.
Right? Like, it may not be elsewhere when you're a team that's only won 7 games. You might need more out of your top free agent wide receiver acquisition. So whether the Chiefs spend big there or nowhere or somewhere else, they can afford some risk, right? Like, what's worst case scenario for the Chiefs next year, Patrick Mahomes plays 17 games, 11 wins, 12 wins?
Yeah.
Worst case, I'm not talking best case, I'm talking worst case scenario. So you've got some wiggle room that I think is a big advantage of being so successful.
All right, let's spend a minute here talking about wide receivers in this draft, talking about pick 31 for the Chiefs.
Yeah.
We had a chance to sit down with Zay Flowers at the East West Shrine Bowl, and then I had a chance to go watch some of his film. He's fun to watch.
He's dynamic as all get out. Yeah.
He looks in his movement, his change of direction in and out of his breaks. He looks like an NFL receiver the way that he explodes out of those, and you can tell he's going to create separation. And I think about that with Patrick Mahomes, that would be successful.
I think he's the best combination of athleticism and polish in this year's class. There are other guys who are going to be great athletes and test really well, but aren't as refined as a receiver as Zay Flowers is. Incredibly explosive. He's definitely on the pint size of the scale as opposed to, you know, this is not Quentin Johnson from TCU, who's like a pterodactyl, as someone, as people often call him. But he plays bigger, plays more vertical than you might expect for a guy of his stature. So I love Zay Flowers. I think this year the wide receiver class is going to be beauty in the eye of the beholder.
Mm.
Zay Flowers, Quentin Johnston. I think Jackson Smith and Jigba is going to enter that conversation. And then I think you're going to see guys in the second round that are good players, but that if you pulled 10 teams, if there's 5 second round receivers, each one might view them in a different order.
Mm.
Yeah. So it's a strength and numbers class more so than it is, okay, you know, Jamar Chase is wide receiver one in this class, or, you know, there's a Jamar Chase and a Jalen Waddle and a Devontae Smith. We don't have that this year, but we've got some really, really good players.
All right, last position group I want to ask you about are, you know, say edge rushers, those premium pass rushers, you can say an interior guy, those inside outside guys. I know Steve Spagnuolo loves to move those guys around.
Sure.
Who within that area, and you know, not the top five picks, because Chiefs aren't going to be flirting in with that, but who are some of those guys end of the first round could be around that are intriguing to you that Chiefs fans can start to get to know a little bit about?
Yeah, it's a good question, because I think that what's not clear is where the guys are going to stack up after the obvious ones. So Will Anderson from Alabama will be a top five pick most likely. And then beyond that, like Tyree Wilson from Texas Tech could be a top eight pick, could be a top 15 pick, right? Lucas Van Ness is kind of a more versatile player from Iowa. He could be a top 20 pick, could be a top eight pick, could be a top 30 pick, right? Will McDonald IV from Iowa State, great athlete, strong Senior Bowl week. He could be, I thought it wasn't even a first round pick until Mel Kiper Jr. had him in his most recent mock draft at eighth overall, right? So I think that what we're realizing it was with the edge class, like, that's going to be another one where every team's going to value them a little bit differently.
All right. Final thoughts before we let you go. Again, we're hanging out with ESPN's Field Yates, getting some good stuff, talking Chiefs, talking draft. Who's your favorite sleeper player?
Ooh, good question.
That will not be a sleeper anymore after this.
No, yeah, it's going to say, like, you're going to have a hard time. You know, I actually made a note on my phone of guys that I was, like, watching closely recently. Let me see if I can find. I had something I wanted to write down, and I was like, let me see if I can.
We asked that earlier to Charles Davis, and he brought up Julius Brents, cornerback from K-State.
Okay. So
he was just placating to his audience.
All right.
Kansas City sports fans.
Look at these names. These are like, I got to like type my own names like more legibly. Yeah, now I'm reading all my draft notes, and there is just like way too much stuff in here. All right, so Kalijah Kancey from Pittsburgh, who I don't really think is going to go that far down. I'm looking at all the wide receivers. No, man, I have a file that is just like not at all worthwhile of stuff. I don't have a good answer right now. Like these guys are all the names, like Jalen Hyatt, like, you know, these names, Jalen Hyatt, right? These
you call
are
him a sleeper.
All, like, yeah, these aren't a sleeper at all. Like this.
Deuce Vaughn. I'll go with Deuce Vaughn.
Deuce Vaughn from K-State. That's flying too close to the sun, man. That's, you know. I'll tell you one though.
All right.
I mean, I don't know. Maybe people may know him. Siaki Ika from Baylor. Started his career at LSU. 360 pounds. Rare power. Freaking beast. Try moving him around. Don't know exactly where he fits. Might not be a three down player, but like a fun guy to watch.
That is a good one. Yeah. That is good stuff.
I need to have those. My file is like, you know, wide receivers I like. And these guys are all too like well-known. Hendon Hooker, quarterback I like. Like, I need to start digging a little bit deeper, because I realize people care about the diamonds in the rough a little bit.
Yeah. Plus, once the Chiefs select them late and they get really good, we're going to go back and clip
there
this out.
Be
like,
hey,
Field knew.
There we go. Siaki Ika.
Field called it. All right. Good stuff. Field Yates and ESPN. We appreciate you for stopping by. We're going to take a quick break. We'll have more right after this from Radio Row here at the Combine.
You're listening to the fastest growing sports media network in Kansas City, KC Sports Network. We'll be back right after this.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Entertain, educate, inform. KC Sports Network.
Welcome back to Radio Row here in Indianapolis. I'm BJ Kissel. This is the KCSN Draft Show, bringing you different perspectives from different people here at Radio Row. And one of my favorite interviews, one of my favorite dudes that I've known for a very long time in this business, one of the hardest working people that you will find in this business. You can find his work at CBS Sports HQ. You can also find him at Football Game Plan, Emory Hunt. Emery, it's probably been a little more than a decade that we've been talking about football and doing all this stuff together. But man, it's good to see you. Appreciate you coming on and joining us.
I was glad to be here, man. It's good to see you, and good to see you continue to grow in this industry, man. Like when we met, we were two little seedlings walking around aimlessly, and now look at us all. Big boy equipment and things like that. Dress well and everything.
We get cameras and backdrops and all this. And then you're at the big stage over there with the CBS crew. For anybody who's watching and doesn't know how the combine's set up, it's like a big open room and there's like a divider and you've got like radio row where all these tables are set up just like ours with hundreds or however many people are out here. And then on the other side are like the major sets for like, you know, you graduate to that side. Emery has graduated to the big sets where he's not carrying all the equipment around. He used to, man. That's what I always enjoyed seeing. Cause you were running around, you put in the work. And we were talking about before we started recording, how many different All-Star games have you been to?
Eight.
This cycle, eight All-Star games. What, tell me about the one that you were just at. We were just talking about
the HBCU Legacy Bowl, which was in New Orleans, Louisiana, my hometown, born and raised. Got to give those props. And it was a great event because it's a week long event set up like the Senior Bowl for all the top HBCU prospects. And this year's edition is the second year. I was good about it that they attached the HBCU Combine to the beginning of the week on that Monday. Mm. And so now some guys that participated in the week got to participate in the combine, and you know, some guys that didn't just at least got the combine. Then you go and practice in front of scouts, and then you have the game on Saturday. The problem this year was that it was Mardi Gras week. So yes, Monday was great. We got an email saying there's no practice on Tuesday because obviously streets are blocked off in New Orleans. They won't be able to get out the hotel. So now it's practice on Wednesday, Thursday, walk through Friday, game Saturday. So it was great to be out there. It's going to continue to grow. And it's a great event to see these guys go out there and showcase. I personally wish it would be a little earlier.
Okay.
Because it runs up against.
You go into eight All-Star games. They're going to run into each other.
Well, put them in December, right? All right. You know what I'm saying? Because you don't want this one to be right after or right before the combine.
Yeah.
For obvious reasons, right?
Right.
So that's my only takeaway.
All right. Who are the players that stood out? Because we saw it with the Chiefs last year. I mean, Josh Williams, I think Nazee Johnson, like, and then the history of the organization. I mean, I was there. Maybe listening to this, was there for 6 years, know the history of the Willie Lanier's and the Emmett Thomas at Bishop College and like the different, all the history the Chiefs have had. And we've talked about that going back to the original Otis scouting
Taylor.
Days. Huh?
Otis Taylor.
Yes. And I'm blanking on the scout's name, Lloyd Wells, the scout for the Chiefs, and what he was able to do to help him win Super Bowl IV with all the players that he was able to bring in. Legend that most Chiefs fans should know. If you don't, look him up. But who were the players that stood out to you at the HBCU Bowl?
It was a defensive jambalaya or a defensive gumbo, to put it that way.
Right.
You look at going back to, you know, I'm glad you brought up, you know, the kid from Fayetteville State, Williams, yep, right? Josh. Because there was another corner out there that just tore it up. It was Keenan Isaac, who I think we saw down at the NFLPA Bowl.
Okay.
Measured in at 6'2", 188 pounds, lockdown corner, and was consistent. Now, he's going up against a guy that I'm surprised he's not here because he would have burned up the track in Xavier Smith, a receiver from FAMU, Florida A&M.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he's a shorter, shiftier guy, but he did a great job of making sure he didn't beat him with speed. He made him work hard because his press skills was excellent. And Isaac was someone now that has stacked back-to-back excellent All-Star game performances. And that's just huge for him going forward. I think he's someone that may end up getting drafted now based off those two All-Star game performances that we didn't see here at the Combine. So he stood out. And Joshua Pryor was a name that was very popular 2 years ago coming out of Bowie State. Kind of fell out of favor a little bit. More people had questions about his weight. You know, he was 270 at one point, dropped down to 219. We found out why, and then now he's up to 242, looks great, and carries it well, moves well, looks like the product he was 2 years ago. So he had a great week. And also another guy that stacked together back-to-back All-Star game performances was Andrew Farmer out of Lane College, a Division II program. Was excellent at the Hula Bowl, and then parlayed that into an opportunity here at the HBCU Combine Legacy Bowl. And did exceptionally well.
We could I'm going to ask you about some more players. We'll take a break from that for people that aren't familiar with these players, trying to remember all of this. When you go to all these different events, like, what is your favorite part of going through this process? Is it just watching the guys compete? Is it getting a chance to talk with them? What is it that kind of keeps you going? And I said 8 All-Star events is a lot. I like going to all the different All-Star games. I appreciate them. 8 is a lot. So you obviously love it. What is it about each of those events that you look forward to the most?
Well, it's understanding my process, you know. Football is 24/7, 365 for me because I cover the NFL, Canadian, USFL, XFL, and stuff, right? And so during the regular fall football season, I'm covering NFL and college football. I'm calling games. I'm analyzing games. So my draft process doesn't really start until January. So that's what I love the most. I get to get eyes on these guys before I get eyes on their film. So now I get to see body type, movement skills, athleticism, true height and weight, because we know it's always a 2-inch. We both play college athletics. No. We know it's a 2-inch and 10-pound sheet.
Yeah.
You know? So when you get to a real game and you see a guy there at legitimately 6'2", 188, okay, how is he built? Can he add 10 more pounds with his frame? He can. You can project him now forward. So I just love being able to see things for the first time in a live setting, because then now I go back to the tape and I'm not surprised. Or I am surprised by what I see on film, because we know this. All-star game settings are the biggest tease. The guy can go out there and kill it in one-on-ones, and you go back and watch the film, you're like, man, this dude couldn't get off bump press in a real game, but he's out here killing it in one-on-ones. So when I see something for the first time and it doesn't mesh up with films, I have a now sharper picture on what this prospect actually is.
When you've gone through this and you've watched, and then we talk about like sleeper positions, and I know running back, you probably got your eye on a lot of the running backs. We talked about that out the East West Shrine Bowl. You like the bigger backs, like the big
old
guys.
School.
Who is in this draft your prototypical, like, that's my guy?
You have a draft? You ready for this? You're going to love this. What? Deuce Vaughn.
Really?
I am a Deuce Vaughn fan.
I'm happy that you said that, but I just set it up talking about big backs, and then you bring up the shifty guy.
Right.
Love
the
to hear
shorter,
it.
Shorter. Shift your guy. Give me Deuce Vaughn, because if it's funny, because we watched Darren Sproles have his career at K-State, and we get treated to see someone like Darren Sproles have another career like that. Where
I saw it since he was in fifth grade. So we grew up. We grew up together. So
you,
like,
told me that. Yeah, you told me about him.
We couldn't tackle him when he was little. So we're kind of, everybody I grew up with is happy that he made it, because it's like, we couldn't tackle him. We're glad that nobody else could either.
And nobody still can't. And nobody won't as he moves to the pro game. People will knock him because he's 5'6", 175 or whatever, but they ignore the fact that he's making these guys that are also going to the pros, he's making them look stupid, he's making them miss, he's breaking long runs, he's shown he can handle volume, he's not taking these hellacious hits, he can catch the football, he can return, he can do everything that you want in an explosive, game-breaking level. Why would I ever take that guy off the field?
Yeah.
And again, the coup de grace was the fact that he had a great game in his last game against Alabama.
Yeah.
What more do you need to see?
It's a forgettable game the way that it ended, but we'll always have that like 86-yard touchdown, like the longest touchdown run, I think, against Nick Saban in Alabama.
Why did y'all have a 48-play drive that ended in no points?
I don't want to talk about it. I don't know.
Y'all took up 2/4 of people's lives, and nobody's got in the end zone.
We took, you know what, we won the Big 12. We won the Big 12. I spent the entire time, we're going to go off here, go off script a little bit. Spent a lot of time at the Shrine Bowl when we were out there talking to the players, all of the Big 12 guys, Deshaun Jameson, all the Texas guys, the D-tackle that we talked to, DeAndre Burton. That's not right. Like, who's the defensive tackle from Texas? Colburn. Deontay Colburn. So we were talking, anyway, we're talking to the Texas guys and all the Big 12 guys. Which season would you have rather had? What TCU did, losing the Big 12 championship, winning the Peach Bowl, the third place game, as I call it, the semifinal game, and then going to the national title, getting smoked. Or K-State season, where you win the Big 12, you can call yourself a champion, and then your season, you go lose to Alabama pretty badly.
Right.
Which team would you rather been on, TCU or K-State?
K-State, because at least you got to say, hey, we won the conference championship, and we lost to Alabama. And because, again, no one's going to care that you got blown out or how you lost and say, oh, that's Alabama. But you didn't get embarrassed on national TV in front of everybody. So everybody was like, why are they even in the game? I even joke tweeted out man, put Ohio State now. Put Michigan. put Michigan back in. I won't see them. This was like in the first quarter. I was like, all right, I'm out on TCU, Georgia. I don't want to see this no more.
Yeah.
It's like four plays.
My thing was just K-State just call themselves champions.
Yeah.
They get a ring. They get a big trophy. And I'm reminded that they won the Peach Bowl so they can get a Peach Bowl ring or a champion. But, like, that's a semifinal game. You still don't – it's not winning your conference, not winning the Big 12. They weren't champions of anything.
No one understands. We had to say in college, no one understands, beat me last. You're only good as your last game. Tell University of Miami to beat us last, University of Louisiana, right? Yes, the last time you played them was 1928. It doesn't matter. We have no reason to play them again. We won already. Why? Beat us last. That's it.
Love to hear it. All right, let's get a few more prospects. Who are some of the other small school guys that have stood out to you, either at the All-Star games that you've been or from the film that you've watched, that some of those late-round gems that might not be getting the love for one reason or another, but you believe have the traits and the mental acuity and all that to step up and make an impact?
There's two guys that I would bang the table for on my football team. One, yep. Lindsey Scott Jr., the quarterback out of Incarnate Word, 5'10 and a half, 5'11, 215 pounds. Everywhere this young man has gone, he balled out. He's class of 2016. He signed with LSU. He was a Gatorade High School Player of the Year, Louisiana, okay. Which means something because that state is fantastic with football prospects. Didn't play at LSU. Transfers to East Mississippi Community College.
Okay.
Wins a national championship there. Transfers to Missouri. Didn't play. Transferred to Nichols and did a great job breaking records there. Cam Ward leaves Incarnate Word, goes to Washington State. He transfers to Incarnate Word and puts up 60 touchdown passes this season, wins the Walter Payton Award, which is the FCS equivalent to the Heisman Trophy, and also had 10 rushing touchdowns added to the mix, too. He was a 3,000, 1,000-yard guy at Nichols. Didn't run as much here at Incarnate Word, but scored a gang of touchdowns, threw a lot of touchdowns. He is someone that plays the quarterback position like you want it to be played. He is phenomenal with the football in his hands. That's one. And he
Tucker, what happened? He's a Mizzou guy. Oh. So I was like, what happened? Like, we've talked so much about Mizzou quarterbacks. And it's like, you had one.
He was right there.
You had a good one.
LSU had him too. And LSU decided to go with, I think, Nussmeier or Johnson or whatever.
Okay.
Burrow came in. That's what it was.
The trend. Yeah.
Yeah. So now he goes to, you know, he breaks all these records and he just got drafted last weekend. Second overall in the USFL draft by the Pittsburgh Maulers. So he has an option to go play, you know, in spring ball if he chooses to. But I think he's an NFL guy. But worst case scenario, he's going to be their starting quarterback, I believe.
Okay.
And Hunter Lukey, the fullback out of North Dakota State. And we are old enough to remember, and it's not just because he wears 44, but he's like Tom Raffman. When you talk about someone that can carry the football, so he can be your four-minute offense guy. He can catch the football down the field, so he's a legitimate downfield threat. Good athleticism. He blocks well. He can even be someone that's a situational goal line, short yard runner, yardage runner. He does a lot of things great. He was their starting tailback at North Dakota State. Remember how Zach Lyon used to run for SMU?
Mm-hmm.
And then we got down to the Shrine Bowl, and then they say, oh, he could be a fullback or whatnot. I'm like, you got to be kidding me. I just watched him rush for 1,400 yards.
Every running back you're going to like that fits your style is going to be, this guy play fullback.
He can play full. It's like, come on, man. Like, so I like Hunter Lukey. I'm excited to see him here compete and what he runs and how he runs. We didn't get to see
Chiefs winning the Super Bowl. What stood out to you about that run? And, what caught your attention?
I love the fact that the Chiefs find a way to make a way. You know, on paper, and I'm not going to lie. You know, I am on record saying that I thought the Chiefs were going to get blown out.
Okay.
You know, and they were on pace until.
I didn't know this.
Yeah,
they're still friends.
They're still friends. You know, they were on pace until Jalen Hurts fantably dropped the football, and it was a scoop and score.
Yeah.
So that changed the tide. And
I think Rihanna changed everything, but
I think the field also changed everything, too. Like, if you have a soggy field in Arizona, none of it made sense. And so now you have the big punt return by
Tony.
That was the biggest play of the game.
Yep.
Then you have plays being made by McKinnon. You have plays being made by everybody on that football team. To me, it's probably the most complete team win you'll see. Mm-hmm. Patrick Mahomes, 20-something yard scramble on that ankle.
Mm-hmm.
So everybody on that roster, you know, needed to make something happen to make that team win. So I love seeing that for those guys. I love seeing Andy Reid get another one. I love to see Patrick Mahomes get another one. So this was a great team win, especially with those youthful guys in the secondary.
Yeah.
Man, this is the type of game that coaches will point to in the dog days of summer, like fighting through adversity. We were down here, you know, down 10. This guy, we had three, you know, they're going to over-exaggerate. We had three high schoolers in the secondary playing, you know, and so all those, you know, hurdles, they found a way to overcome them and win a championship.
Yeah. It's good stuff, man. That's Emory Hunt from CBS Sports HQ and the Football Game Plan. You can find him calling games on Saturdays in the fall. Every time I see it on social media, you're doing something else, man. And it's been a blessing to watch you rise in this business and be over on the big side with the big stages over there, man. You've absolutely earned it. And haven't even commented on the best dressed man out here in Indianapolis. It's Emory Hunt. Appreciate you. Appreciate everybody for listening and or watching. Hit that like and subscribe. Follow us. We'll have more content coming to you from Indy here at the Scouting Combine the rest of this week.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts, so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.